purser, an Indian woman who had been trying to comfort and console passengers for the previous 17 hours, managed to get one emergency exit open before the hijackers shot her in the head. The remaining crew members coaxed bewildered hostages down an inflatable slide into the uncertain night. Other passengers attempted to jump to safety from an emergency hatch where the slide had failed to open. Many of them were injured. Authorities on the ground had been caught off guard by the sudden exodus, and no one was outside the aircraft to help. With little guidance, people scurried in every direction, some holding children or trying to support the wounded as they sought refuge from the explosions and the shooting. It was impossible to tell who was firing or in what direction. Soldiers frantically hunted for the hijackers. Passengers ran for cover, and I sprinted across the tarmac towards it all with my tape recorder rolling. From the earlier media briefings, I knew that Pakistani commandos had been preparing for some kind of a raid. But they were nowhere to be seen, and it fell to regular army troops to try and gain control. I caught sight of someone lying in the back of an army vehicle, whom I presumed to be a wounded passenger. The soldiers allowed me to crawl into the wagon, where I attempted to interview the man. "Are you hurt?" It turned out that the person I thought was a victim was actually one of the hijackers who had just been apprehended. I sat in the truck for a brief moment, bewildered, face to face with the terrorist, while the soldiers laughed. To say that I was in over my head would be an understatement. By the time the carnage ended, there were 20 bodies lined up in Karachi's morgue, 120 people in hospital, and 239 other passengers and crew members whose lives had been permanently scarred. All the hijackers were captured and would face death sentences that would eventually be commuted to life in prison. Nirja Banot, the purser who had been fatally shot while trying to help the hostages through the emergency hatch, would be celebrated in India as a national hero. The Pakistanis would spend decades trying to account for how they could have allowed this act of terrorism to happen. I had come to Pakistan hoping to feel the heat of foreign journalism, to cover stories of consequence, of life and death. I know I'm not personally responsible for the hijacking of Pan Am Flight 73, or the massacre that took place inside the jumbo jet. Still, I'm uncomfortable when I remember that silent prayer, because drama is what I had wanted. It's what I had hoped for. The lesson I learned that day is that journalists all too often have their best moments when other people are having their worst. Only a handful of foreign reporters had gained access to the airport that morning before the Pakistani army arrived and closed it. Among them was a veteran journalist from the Financial Times, John Elliott, who took me under his wing and showed me, among other things, how to make international calls from a public phone. It was in the days before the widespread use of mobiles. When a policeman nabbed me on the tarmac, John barked, "Leave her alone! She's a journalist!" The gun-wielding officer, who had full authority to stop people, actually recoiled as if I were red hot. This was my first real experience of the entitlement that comes with the profession, the access to places the public can't go. I would make ample use of it in the years to come, learning the term for journalist in other languages and employing it like a tool to pry open doors in dozens of different countries, along with all the other devices of the business. The flak jacket emblazoned with the word press, the accreditation that puts you on the other side of the yellow police tape, the photo ID that gains you access to the inner sanctums of the powerful and influential. It gives you permission to call strangers in the middle of the night or even arrive at their door, to question authority, to demand accountability from people in charge. More important, it gives you admission into the lives of others, into their most tragic, emotional, and often degrading experiences. It permits or even compels you to ask personal questions, to probe, to intrude at the moment when people are coping with calamity. And it presumes that everyone has a story that they want to have told, if only some.